Se baila así, se goza más. 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 Se baila así,
ay, qué ritmo sabroso.
Se goza más.
Este ritmo yo lo gozo.
Se baila así, tú quieres para echar. Se goza más.
Davis Van Opdorp here with Stefan Biankowski and Jonathan Harding, and back here for the Tribuna Weekly, all of us back fit, all of us back in Bonn, and we have a lot to talk about in after an eighth match day that saw a lot of a lot of results that were unflattering for some teams, very flattering for others. So we're going to mix up the format a little bit this time. We wanted to start, since we're at the eighth match day 8 point, we wanted to start talking about the narratives a little bit more. And so we're going to start with some of the underachieving teams in the Bundesliga. And I think there's no better place to start than with Borussia Dortmund, because they drew 3-3 with Ingolstadt, but that scoreline definitely looked a lot worse for them than it actually indicates on the table. Jonathan, obviously you said off air that Matthias Ginter said this was the worst performance since their Europa League qualifiers last season. They looked completely disorganized defensively. What basically went wrong for them?
Well, it's interesting as well, because Thomas Tuchel said after the game he didn't feel that the first half was in any way, shape or form worthy of Bundesliga football. Technically, mentally, physically, none of it. Tactically, which is very interesting for a manager like that to sort of come out and say, we were inept in every single category. But when you watch the first 45 minutes, that's exactly what they were. The first two Ingolstadt goals are carbon copies of one another,
yeah.
Really. Literally, barring the fact that the first one is scored with the foot and the second is scored with the head, I think they are exactly the same play as the free kick.
And delivered by the same player?
The same player. And
delivered on the same side of the wing?
Unbelievable. And they're delivered to the same spot.
Yeah.
Which is really remarkable. But Mark Bartra is not necessarily doing his job. There were some questions after the game about the high line and defensively. I think if you're going to play that, then you have to make sure that you win the ball. It sounds really simple, but Dortmund weren't even doing that. And if you're going to play a high line and then track back deep, you cannot be second to the ball. Julian Weigl had the same issue. He was not necessarily marking anyone. And I think this is often the problem. It's easy to look at the goal and say, oh, there are a lot of shirts back there, but what are those shirts actually doing? Is it an effective way of dealing with the situation? And I think that was Dortmund's biggest issue. And they were totally rattled. And Tuchel spoke about it after the game, and he's right, but it's all well and good being right, but you have to start to make changes. We have to remember this side is very young. We have to remember this side is very inexperienced, which is what Tuchel said after the game. You know, even someone like Julian Weigl, who is obviously a guaranteed starter in this team, he is not that experienced. We have to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And this team is still learning. And I don't want to say, you know, sound like a broken record, but I've said this a number of times. Next season, Dortmund will be more exciting, I think, because I know it sounds very sort of strange, because probably all Dortmund fans are always saying next season. And that's certainly what Dortmund fans have said to me. But I have to agree with them, because this time around, I do feel that next year Dembele will be sharper. He'll have had a year under his belt in the Bundesliga. Pulisic will be better, which is even more exciting, obviously. But more importantly, players like Weigl or Paslak, even Roman Bürki, Ginter, Bartra, they will all start to understand the system a bit better. And I think if things go the same way next year as they have gone this year, then we can start to ask some more serious questions.
Well, is Dortmund a team that can afford to go through these growing pains, Stefan? Because they weren't really that far off from contending from a title. Now, of course, we've mentioned this several times, they've lost their three best players. But, I mean, this Ingolstadt is a team that they should be beating no matter who is on the field.
Yeah, I think it depends who first comes to mind when you think of Dortmund. If you're a Dortmund fan and you think of Thomas Tuchel, then I think you're probably given the benefit of the doubt, because, as you say, they've lost key players. Tuchel's quite clearly trying to rebuild the squad. If the first person you think of when you think of Dortmund is someone like Vatska, then I think your sympathy begins to run out quite quickly. You're right, we have talked about 100 times, talked about why Dortmund chose to sell three players. I know two of them are out of contract. Not quite sure what happened with the Mkhitaryan deal. I'm not actually sure anyone is actually. It's kind of been coming on and being brushed under the table. From my understanding, it was a very quick turnaround from when Man United.
And Vasco wasn't happy about it anyway. So.
Yes. Anyway, I don't want to get bogged down in that again. Yep. The point I want to make is that there are certain people at the club who I think the fans are quite understandably questioning why Dortmund, once again, aren't ready to challenge, well, not challenge Bayern, but to at least put up a fight. But Thomas Tuchel isn't one of those people because he's the trainer at the end of the day and he can only do with the tools he has. And right now he's got a squad, a young squad. We've said on the pod in the last couple of weeks about how I don't think that these young players are up to the task of filling in to be a team that will comfortably finish second. I don't want to criticise anyone in particular. For the likes of Pulisic and Dembele are doing exactly what kids that age should be doing. Unfortunately, that's not enough to beat teams like Hertha or
even
Leverkusen or Ingolstadt.
Ingolstadt, yeah.
One of the tactical things I wanted to point out, actually, which John mentioned there, is about the way that how vulnerable they do look on the counter-attack this season. They beat Sporting in midweek in Champions League, but I think Sporting's goal was on the break. Hertha, when their goal came from a back heel from Ibisevic, it just took two or three Dortmund players out of the game immediately. And of course, the Leverkusen game, we saw a Leverkusen team who are quite happy to sit back and hit in the break as well. So I know Dortmund are missing key players. And like you say, Bartra in particular seems to be one who hasn't settled in as much. Paslak, maybe, I think he's really good going forward, but at times he can be a bit careless at the back. They've lost Schmelzer as well, who's probably one of the last of the old guards.
Yeah,
so.
I think well, we've mentioned this before, that they, I think the biggest thing that they lost in the summer was not just their star players, but a lot of characters. And the fact that even Socrates is a huge character, and he was one that could have really rallied this team to actually defend better against Ingolstadt.
But this, sorry to interrupt, Dave.
No, go ahead.
But this is the kind of thing I said in the last match day against Hertha, was when. There are still senior players in the squad, but you're not really entirely sure if they're willing to step up. Like, for example, Piszczek might have the best intentions in the world, but he's obviously physically probably not where he used to be, at least in his heyday under Klopp. Kagawa seems to have reverted back into this very shy state that he's in.
He looked very shy on Saturday, for sure.
I mean, Weidenfeller played as well. He wasn't necessarily... But it's interesting, Tuchel gave Aubameyang the captaincy.
Yeah.
Against Ingolstadt, which was actually very interesting, ahead of Weidenfeller, and that didn't have the positive effect.
Aubameyang was one I'd criticised last week for not stepping up against Hertha, in my opinion.
But then again, you know, I think he's scored fairly consistently this season, and he's leading by example if he's still growing into the role of leading as a captain in a different way. But I think that the high line point is a good one to raise, but I think it's an inevitability because of the way that Thomas Tuchel wants his teams to play.
Yeah, you've said that before.
The problem is, the problem is that this Dortmund team at the moment, given their inexperience, can't quite handle it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a bad way to play. It's a very effective way to play. In fact, when you look at the way that Dortmund played against Real Madrid in the first 25 minutes before the goal, they were excellent. They really choked Madrid. And by playing basically on the halfway line.
Yeah.
And if you have the concentration as a team, not just as one or two players, but as a team, to be able to implement that, then it's very, very effective. But what we saw against Ingolstadt was a complete lack of concentration, firstly from two set pieces. And then in the second half, when Aubameyang scores and you think, right, here's the Dortmund comeback.
Yeah.
A minute later, 40 seconds later, Ingolstadt score on a simplest breakaway because Dembélé plays a pass that's needless, and Ingolstadt break away, and he has a half-hearted attempt to run back and track, and that's just unacceptable. Comes down to concentration, and it comes down to the ability to implement a style of play that Thomas Tuchel is obviously very persistent to use, which is fine, but it's going to take time, and I think Dortmund fans know that, or at least those who watch week in, week out. But the rest of the league may be a bit, or anybody else watching the rest of the league may be a bit impatient that Dortmund aren't keeping pace with previous seasons. Well, but it's inevitability. The team is learning. It's a very difficult system to implement. And these guys are still very young.
Are they going to get that time, though? Because we're going to mention some of these teams later. But they've already... they're in sixth place in the table right now, which is, considering their big resurgence last year, is really underachieving, especially since the teams in front of them are ones that were way below them last year.
True, but you know, you said it off air just before, it's only match day 8. There's enough time yet. I think that they'll get their groove back together eventually, but it will be very telling how this team performs, because you talk about characters and a lack of them in the team, and I agree, but sometimes it's a bit too easy to just say this team lacks character.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a valid point, but I think more important for that for Dortmund is that they lack the experience or necessarily perhaps the tactical understanding to be able to implement what Tuchel wants. That will come in time. At the end of the season, how successful that learning has been will be based on where they finish in the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's simple. But that's a problem now that a lot of other teams are facing. And I know we also wanted to talk about Leverkusen. You wrote a nice piece before their Champions League game, Steph, about how Schmidt has this, you know, tactic. He wants them to be very aggressive in games, but this was the complete opposite.
Mm.
And I just feel really disappointed with a team that is almost like a yo-yo club in terms of form,
well,
back and forth.
Let's get this Leverkusen narrative. Let's fill it in a little bit, because they lost at the weekend 3-0 to Hoffenheim. Granted, they were playing down a man the entire game, but this is also a team that, although they've had their bad performances, they've beaten teams like Dortmund this season. Of course, Stefan, like John said, you were at the game. What was the how did you gauge the feeling around the club with the way that they were playing against a Hoffenheim team that's obviously on its way up?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, as you say, they were up against a really, really good Hoffenheim team, and that really, I don't think that can be stressed enough, actually. Nagelsmann has, I mean, you talk about coaches being given time to implement their own system. Nagelsmann's, in a matter of a season, he's managed to turn Hoffenheim into this really strong, outstanding team. Sadio Wagner's came into that team, and I was almost blown away, actually, by the piss performance, actually, Leverkusen. Mm. I thought he didn't put a foot wrong. He reminded me so much of Lewandowski in the way that he can play as this big target man. He can take the ball down the chest. He can wrestle. You know, if a guy can wrestle Jonathan Tah to the ground and then dribble past two or three players, and you know, that's an outstanding player in my eyes.
Leverkusen was. I mean, this is not the first time that they're playing down a man. Did you expect something better from them against Hoffenheim, or is this basically what you expected?
After going a man down.
Down, yeah.
I'm not sure. They didn't really change too much after Voland went off. He was playing as a lone striker, and after that, they end up just playing kind of like Julian Brandt up front, and that didn't work out well at all. He missed a really good chance in the first half to level the scoring, I think. And the team, Leverkusen, just didn't look sharp at all. They're missing a number of key players, to be honest. The most obvious one being Chicharito, but it was really slack passing. The only player who really looked up to the task was actually Kevin Campbell. I think at times this season we've seen him, he literally runs around the pitch without a position, it would seem, just flows around the pitch putting out fires. Like, you know, it reminds me of actually when I used to play football as a kid, and there'd be one guy who's obviously a lot better than the other team,
mm-hmm.
and he'd play up front or something, but because the team were doing so bad, he's like, right, so he'd step in at centre back or something. At times, Kevin Campbell's playing right back just so Leverkusen could get the ball out of their own half, and I think that was quite telling. Brandt had a bad game. The central midfield didn't do too well. Lars Bender came off at half time because he was looking a bit clumsy. It was just a bad day at the office for Leverkusen, which we've seen a lot this season. I don't think there's any real fear or pressure at the club for Schmidt's job. They're quite happy with the job he's done. And he really is really integrated into the system there. Leverkusen aren't really like the likes of Hamburg or something.
Well, because that's interesting, because there have been some people out there that don't think that Schmidt is the right man. Now, of course, the reason for that, some people have said, is his disciplinary record. But John, obviously, that's something else entirely.
Yeah, I wrote something yesterday about it, and I don't want to sort of hark on about it too much, but, you know, obviously he's an emotional guy. There's no denying that. And there's no place for disrespect. I don't want to, you know, sound like I'm pro managers shouting abuse at other managers, but there are a couple of things we have to remember. We live in an age where everything you do is recorded, and that sometimes takes adjusting, and maybe it's a weak argument for a manager who's in professional football who is obviously aware of that. But sometimes when you're in an emotional situation, you're frustrated, you've had your striker sent off after 6 minutes, your game plan's in the bin and you're losing.
Mm.
It's not easy to remember that actually everything that you do sometimes is recorded. Secondly, Roger Schmidt has a record of this, yes. The more concerning thing about him shouting at Nagelsmann is the, do you think you invented football? That sort of disrespectful, you're a young manager, da-da-da-da-da. That's more disrespectful for me than saying, you know, what are you thinking, shut up. Yeah, because people disagree about decisions. That's been the case in football, that's been the case in sport for donkey's years, and it always will be. And Rudi Völler said after the game, you don't think that we're going to fire people because he told another guy to shut up, do you? And he's right, because quite frankly, that's no reason to fire someone. If you're going to get rid of Roger Schmidt, it's because, as much as Steph is right about him getting the game plan together for Leverkusen, it's if he fails to take them on the next step and they have a terrible season on the pitch. I don't think his emotional nature has a negative effect on the team. I think the team is certainly aware of what he wants. They are also an emotional team, very aggressive. That's how he wants them to play. And I don't think it's really headline news. I don't think it needs to be made into headline news. A lot of people are suggesting, oh, it's not the type of behaviour you want to see from a Bundesliga manager. No, the disrespect isn't. But the emotion is something that everybody wants to see from a manager, especially in a sport that is slowly but surely being made more and more robotic.
Mm-hmm. So I thought just on the topic of, you know, Leverkusen's expectations and you know, the idea that they're underperforming, which they are, I found it quite interesting that at halftime I went into the media section to grab a coffee and I got chatting to one of the guys at the club and I said, you know, how do you feel and stuff? He's like, well, I was doing really well until that red card and then my day's just gotten really worse. And then I said, oh, well, Dortmund, they're also losing. And immediately he's like, oh, really? Like, pepped up immediately. And I thought that was so telling. I think this might sound a bit silly, but I think Leverkusen may be giving themselves a bit of, not credit, but they're not being as harsh on their own performance right now, because they are looking at the likes of Dortmund and Gladbach and thinking, yeah, you know, but this is kind of par for the course. And I think every week Schmidt will look at that league table, and instead of seeing where his team are on the table, he'll just think, how far am I off Dortmund? And to be fair, he's only, 4 points off Dortmund at this point in time. Now, I know Dortmund...
But that's quite telling, don't you think, that a side wouldn't say, let's seize this chance. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, we're on path of the course, let's not birdie it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that, for me, is an opening for Leverkusen, and they haven't taken it.
No, sure, I think, but yeah, absolutely, but we both know how these German clubs run. They're so meticulous in their planning and things, and Dortmund will have a 10-stage plan to catch Bayern. Leverkusen will have a 10-stage plan to catch Dortmund. Gladbach will have a 10-stage plan to be in the top four, things like that, you know. So I think Leverkusen this season are very much... We talked about this at the start of the season, before the season. They really should be challenging Dortmund for second place, and I think that's still very much the case. Maybe that's the wrong attitude to take. It'd be nice to hear from the listeners what they might think, if they can send us tweets and things about this point, but I think right now Leverkusen aren't worried about the position in the table. They're just, the only thing they care about is the gap between them and Dortmund.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because obviously Leverkusen and Dortmund are the two big examples, but there are a lot of other teams, Wolfsburg and Gladbach. Gladbach maybe not completely underperformed, but obviously not taking the step that many thought they would under Andreas Schubert. So can some of these clubs take comfort in the fact that they're not alone in their situation, or do you think that the fact that they're falling behind is bad no matter who's in front of them?
I think the point about Leverkusen looking at Dortmund is spot on. I think that's probably the way that things are. I think Wolfsburg probably feel pretty alone though. Right about now. I think Gladbach's away form is a big concern in the Bundesliga. Obviously that win in Glasgow would have done them a world of good, but you know, Gladbach fans themselves have already said, you know, how disappointed they are that this seems to be something that we just can't do. You know, winning away from home in the league, which is a frustration, but I don't think anybody's going to hold it against them for not winning in Munich. I think that's just the way that it is. But Wolfsburg, this is a real problem. I know a lot of people talked about Dieter Hecking running out of ideas and not being able to get his message across anymore. It certainly looked like that at the beginning of the season. I didn't really feel like I thought there were times at the end of last season where they were still not necessarily taking the steps forward. In the Champions League run against Real Madrid, that whole adventure isn't enough for me, especially considering the fact that they finished 10th last season in the Bundesliga. With the squad they had, that's just unacceptable to do so poorly in the league. Klaus Allofs was speaking on Sunday on Sport 1 on Doppelpass, and he said, basically, he admitted that the loss of Kevin De Bruyne has hit them very hard, and Ivan Perisic, they were unable to replace them both. And that's something that they have really struggled with. He also talked about the fact that he did his best to defend Julian Draxler and say, oh, you know, I don't want anybody thinking that nobody wants to play for this team, blah, 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 blah. It was a, you know, a half-hearted effort, if you like. But Wolfsburg have every right to feel alone because they are playing very poorly at the moment, making a lot of individual mistakes. But we are talking about a team that doesn't have the right approach, the right attitude. Yeah. You know, if you boil it down, Mario Gomez has basically joined Wolfsburg to keep Julian Draxler happy.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really worked because Mario Gomez only scored one goal in 600 minutes so far for Wolfsburg. Julian Draxler...
He has finally scored,
Scored one. Yeah, he has finally scored.
Although he also said that he should have maybe scored another
He should have scored another. He should have scored about 10 already. But,
yeah, he really should have.
But he scored and they still lost. And this is what's most concerning. I find Wolfsburg's performance at the moment just bereft of some sort of desire or drive. Yes, there are some young players in this team. Yes, this team is still coming together. You have some experience there, though. Jeffrey Brummer making a woeful mistake for someone who has enough experience, in my opinion.
PSV last season, one played against Atletico Madrid last season.
I don't think that some of these players are really committed. And I think that's a big problem. And I think whoever comes in has a real job on their hands, not only to get the tactical approach right, but also to get these players in the right frame of mind.
Yeah, is that something that just a manager can fix, though?
Well, because if you look
If you look at some of the candidates that we discussed off air, you saw Roberto Mancini, you saw Mark Wilmots, and you saw Andre Villas-Boas. All three managers had a decent amount of talent at their disposal, and yet they're not managers that are still working now.
I can't imagine Mark Wilmots being a good idea for Wolfsburg. Didn't exactly get the best out of the Belgium team. And if he can't get the best out of the Belgium team, then I'm not sure he can get the best out of Wolfsburg.
Yeah.
Villas-Boas, maybe. It's hard to know really from afar. But you need someone who is going to be able to change the attitude of these players. Because at the moment, it just looks like a paycheck thing for them. And, you know, turn up, we don't win, okay, it doesn't matter. And that's the wrong approach. And what's interesting is that Wolfsburg have tried to throw money at the situation after selling De Bruyne and Perisic. It hasn't worked out. And yet there are other clubs in the league who have thrown money at the situation and it has worked out. And I think sometimes the approach hasn't been very well thought out. Some of the players they've bought have been really bad purchases. And I blame Klaas Allofs for that, definitely. They haven't necessarily handled the situation well. Andre Schürrle comes and then goes, and it sort of, you know, feels like he was just waiting to leave the whole time. But the biggest issue for Wolfsburg is Julian Draxler. They have to get him. He obviously doesn't want to be there, but they have to make him feel happier. They bring in Mario Gomez to do that. He's not scoring. They're not winning. They're not playing well. So how you need a manager that basically is able to get Julian Draxler playing like he plays for Germany, playing for Wolfsburg. And I think if he starts playing well, other players start playing well. Julian Draxler isn't a team player. I don't think he's necessarily the right type of character for the dressing room. He's a bit weak. He gets fouled. He doesn't take, you know, he's a bit of a baby, I think, to be honest. He, you know, cries wolf a lot. But he's their best player. So if he plays well, then I think other people will step up. You know, Maxi Arnold not stepping up, drifting off, such a talented guy. Seguin is the same one, been promoted, looked good, has now doesn't look good. Too many question marks.
Yeah, Wolfsburg actually, I think, is not as a team in terms of its setup is actually not terrible. There are teams that are set up worse than Wolfsburg is. But like you said, I think Julian Draxler is the best player, and either they're not using him correctly, he's not happy, or both, or they basically need to get him going. Is it that simple for Wolfsburg, or do you think this is a problem that's going to persist no matter who's in charge? And
It's a really interesting point because Ross is quite adamant that it's a cultural problem at the club rather than a specific problem that a coach or trainer can fix. He thinks Wolfsburg's a day camp to a certain extent. I'm almost certainly putting words in his mouth here. And he thinks, you know, players move to Wolfsburg with the specific intent of picking up a paycheck and then just leaving it at that. I'm not sure it's as simple as that. I agree with what you said, Dave. I think they've got a good squad. I actually think they've done quite well with the signings they made this year, this summer. Although in the past it's been very feverish, it's been frantic actually. And the manner in which they sold De Bruyne and Pulisic,
Perisic.
Perisic. who's one that people often forget, actually.
Mm, yeah.
He left the exact same time as De Bruyne, and he was almost as important.
He was.
But he was a kid who left Dortmund after, you know, not making it there to a certain extent, or he was deemed surplus to requirement. And he went to Wolfsburg with a really clear intent of proving himself, and he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to compare him to maybe someone like Draxler, who I agree with. I'm a big fan of Draxler, but I think his attitude can stink at times. Like the way he decided he wanted to leave the club. He obviously is a player who he thinks he has the talent to be one of the best in the world. It's something that obviously he's obviously had clear intentions of one day moving on from Schalke. If the club aren't going to take him there, this is obviously the case now at Wolfsburg. But it's interesting to see the fact that he's actually beginning to kind of, maybe not blossom for Germany, but he's playing more and more of a role. And I think, to go way off topic here, I think someone like Yogi Löw, who has always had the talent at his disposal, and instead of doing drastic formation changes or, you know, really succumbing to pressure from the press and things, Löw's very much a more delicate, discreet coach who just makes sure he gets the best out of the best players he has, in the sense that, you know, you don't really often hear too much about German national team players getting pissed off at the coach, and more often than not they do run through walls for him, and that's what Wolfsburg needed. They don't need a coach who's going to rip up the team sheet and start again, because as you say, every week we look at that team and think it should be winning 4 or 5-0. They need a coach who can make these players run through walls for them. And maybe that's what VS Boas is. I'd be really excited if they got VS Boas, just because he's an attacking coach, and I think Wolfsburg's best talents lie in attack. Their defence is still a bit dodgy. I find it interesting that Ismail played Rodriguez at centre back. I think I didn't catch the game, but I saw the highlights.
Strange decision, which obviously went wrong when Bruma got sent off, because then you're looking really vulnerable in that situation. But everything about the way that they just didn't challenge, just didn't go in for tackles, even 50-50 balls,
yeah,
or even balls that they were in a better position to win, they were just half-arsed about.
Yeah.
That's just, you can't have that. In German, you would say that's Arbeitsverweigerung, which is basically translated as refusal to work.
Yeah.
And it looked a bit like that. It looked like they were just refusing to do their job properly. And if I was a Wolfsburg fan, I'd just be furious. I'd be like,
I'm really interested. The interesting thing is that, with the sacking of Hecking, there wasn't this immense release of pressure or anything, so it didn't seem as though, you know, Hecking was some sort of disciplinarian who had to play in a certain way which the players all hated, you know.
I don't think that was it.
Yeah.
I feel like he wasn't getting his message across anymore because of the players' attitudes.
Mm.
And obviously Hecking has done extremely well. You know, they won the cup, for goodness sake, let's not forget that.
Well, keep in mind they did win the cup, but that's almost now a season and a half ago.
Hecking's performance, you know, to get the best out of De Bruyne, to make that system work with him, and to basically pick up on a player like Perisic and say this is a guy who wants to prove himself, not just pick up a paycheck, he deserves some credit. But I feel like his message wasn't getting across anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't matter because these players have just got into this one mindset that they just refuse to see any difference. So, you know, be really, really, really big decision for the club, whoever they appoint next.
Well, the one of the managers that is really getting his club to play for him, obviously, is Ralf Hasenhüttl, who has taken Leipzig now to second place after their win against Werder Bremen. Now, we all knew that Leipzig was going to make a big impact just because they have more resources than a lot of other Bundesliga teams, especially the ones that have been promoted in recent years. But this has a completely different brand about it. Some people have said that they're not overperforming. They're performing at the level they should, considering the resources they had. But keep in mind that, I mean, Ralf Hasenhüttl, even though he had done well with Ingolstadt last year, he's taken this team to another level. So do you think now, how are we supposed to manage the expectations for Leipzig now? Are they a team that is supposed to be in the Champions League now? Or is this one that we're supposed to just enjoy the ride since it's only 8 match days in?
I mean, I'd certainly enjoy watching them play football. They're very, very quick, very exciting to watch. Showed that again against Werder Bremen. It's getting to the point now where you don't want to make any rash judgments. We've only had 8 games, obviously, but the way that they're playing, you know, along with Bayern and Hoffenheim, they're the only undefeated team in the league. I'm not sure anybody would have expected that We can talk about expectations. I certainly expected them to do well. I'm surprised that they haven't lost the game yet. I think most people would certainly say that. But yeah, you know, let's not be... Yeah, injuries can make a big difference, of course. There's a season is very long, but the way that they're playing, the confidence with which they play, the attacking nature of their game, the ferocious atmosphere that they have created in their home stadium, there's 42,000 people there. It's really not bad at all. There's no reason to think the Champions League is beyond them. I think it's a perfectly achievable goal, especially considering the size that we just talked about not necessarily hitting the heights. You know, Dortmund are a side that are in development still learning, still young.
Leverkusen, who Leipzig have defeated.
Who Leipzig beaten, exactly. Leverkusen don't know what they are, and that's to Leipzig's advantage, if you like. Gladbach can't win away from home.
Which they didn't when they went to... Leipzig as well.
Yeah, so you're talking about all of the things at the moment. Obviously, again, it's very early days, but everything's playing into Leipzig's hands off, you know, their own pitch, on their own pitch. They're just playing really, really well. Against the Werder Bremen team, who are looking a little bit resurgent with Alexander Nuri, obviously looking after his players and getting things right there. Yeah, Leipzig again. I don't know. It's tough to say whether they're playing over expectation or not. I think they haven't lost a game after 8 games in the Bundesliga and a division they've never been in. And I think that that's a very, you know, an achievement that deserves recognition. I think in that sense, they're overachieving because, you know, 8 games. Wow. But with the quality they've got, and you only have to look at the way that Ingolstadt are not playing anymore to know how much of a good coach Ralf Hasenhüttl is. Then perhaps it's not necessarily that surprising that Leipzig are playing this well.
Well, it's interesting because they did bring a lot of talent in, but Hasenhüttl hasn't really relied on any of those players. I mean, even David Selke, who looked really good during the Olympics, he's basically been the second choice to Yusuf Poulsen. Obviously, Oliver Burke, who was the club's biggest signing, he hasn't played that much either. So do you think that, I mean, Hasenhüttl, he's definitely treating this squad the right way.
Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe one exception to that is Timo Werner.
Naby Keita. So those
and of course, Bernardo's also came in. So there are, I mean, you're right to an extent, but there are some players who have came straight into the squad and done well. But yeah, I think it's tremendous that the way they're playing. I just looked it up there. It's quite interesting that this squad has an average age of 24.2, which is 2 years younger than Dortmund's. So, you know, we kicked off the show here talking about how Dortmund have this really young squad that aren't really up to the task of matching the expectations. But this Leipzig team, who are full of young players, are just happy to go out and play every week. Now, I think a large part of that's down to the fact that there's no expectations for Leipzig. Yeah. They could lose the next 3 games. And the very worst thing that could happen is people say, okay, well, that's kind of what we're all waiting for to happen. But I mean, the interesting thing is, if you look at their fixture list, there isn't anything on that thing that's a definite defeat, except for the very last game they played in 2016 is against Bayern Munich.
And that actually, honestly, that might not be a definite defeat either.
Yeah, if there's still 2 points between Bayern and Leipzig, imagine Leipzig went in top of the league and Christmas, that'd be something. I don't know how.
Be like Hoffenheim all over again.
Yeah.
I think Leipzig are playing exceptional football, and you know, I kind of made a point this on Twitter last night where I said that it's not unforeseeable to see Leipzig hold on to this top 4 spot going into Christmas and then just spending another 30 million on maybe one or two key positions that they might feel they need strengthening. The defence is still a little all over the place. They're not keeping clean sheets as often as they're scoring goals, although they've only conceded 6, I think, in 8 games, so it's not that bad. But
no, I think defensively, I mean, Hasenhüttl is a pretty good defensive coach.
That's a surprise as well. Like, Auburn and then Marvin Kompare,
yeah,
who I remember watching was at Hoffenheim, is rubbish.
Yeah.
Right? And now he's in a system that obviously works for him, but, you know, revolutionized. Really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, especially since we thought when Kyriakos Papadopoulos came, we thought that, oh, I mean, with Kompare and Auburn in the team, that Papadopoulos is just going to slide right in because, I mean, that's why obviously he went out on loan.
And
but
Klostermann is still going to come back at some point. He looked very good at the Olympics. I mean, hey, it's really exciting. But I think that January option makes them, you know, you don't want to say favourites, but, you know, puts them in a very strong position because I don't think many other teams in that situation, even if they had 30 million, would necessarily drop 30 million in January. You know, Dortmund don't normally do that. A lot of German sides don't really take that approach. They normally get their business done in January for the summer.
This adds to the whole new dimension that Leipzig brings to the league this season.
Absolutely.
I mean, a lot of people are happy to criticise the club for the way that it's structured, the way it's came into being. But from a purely sporting point of view, they've been an absolute breath of fresh air. in that sense, long may continue, in my opinion. I just find it interesting. I know we're going to talk about a few of the other teams who are overachieving, but it's going to be really interesting to see if and when the league... If you take Bayern Munich out of that table, it's almost upside down, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see... if it reverts back to the mean or if it stays this way, because if it stays this way, there might be larger factors at play here. Maybe we have to consider the fact that,
let's get into some of those, because you have to look at the table and notice that the three teams that are in the top four, three of the four teams that are in the top four spots.
Four of the top five, actually.
Well, even four of the top five. They are not playing in Europe. Mm-hmm. And you look at teams like Mainz playing against Schalke, and their legs looked completely gone. I mean, you look at Gladbach against Bayern.
Augsburg a few seasons ago.
But Gladbach's legs were completely gone against Bayern. And the fact that they were...
It's to be expected. As Steph said, we've seen this in the past. You know, teams like Frankfurt as well, Freiburg, the same thing. You know,
Dortmund under Klopp.
These teams, even some of the big teams, you know, it can be really, really tiring. And we're actually in the middle of a really busy period for football teams at the moment. You know, European fixtures... I think it was last week, and then we're coming into cup fixtures this week. There's a lot going on. They have a lot. They don't have much time to recover, and even with bigger squads, that's an issue, because then you have this inexperience coming in. But yeah, these sides that don't play in Europe at the moment are playing well, but often that's exactly what happens. They get a European spot, and then the following season, it's actually about avoiding relegation because they're so tired. And that's just an inevitable process. If you can ride the wave of that and avoid relegation and enjoy Europe... and sort of stabilise, that's how you grow. That's how you become a bigger club and you regularly make European competitions. It's just a slow process. It's exciting to see the Bundesliga this close, this fresh, this new. And I think, I don't want to sound like, I'm working for the Bundesliga here, but people are always criticising this league for not being exciting, you know, the title race and blah, blah, blah. If you look at the table at the end of this weekend, it's amazing. So much drama is going on at the top of the table. And, you know, we've spent years talking about how exciting the battle for the Europa League is and how exciting the mid-table clash is. Finally, the top five, unbelievable. You know, Hertha beat Cologne in a game that was
against Cologne was a top game.
Exactly, right? In a game that sees two teams in the top five. Like, that's amazing. You've also got a side like Frankfurt who look revolutionised under Niko Kovac, who finally are playing organised, sensible football, exposing other teams' weaknesses rather than just playing out bland draws or losing. It's really refreshing to watch that happen and to see sides slowly progress. You look at Hertha Berlin, taking the steps. You look at Cologne, solidly moving on from a side that just loved drawing 0-0 to recruiting attacking players who actually have the ability to turn mediocrity into success. It's great.
Now, I wanted to bring this up, Stefan. Is this basically a reality check for all of these top teams that have been in Europe for a long time? Or is this basically a bigger trend that the Bundesliga is starting to get more competitive?
I think...
A one-off where it's like, okay, Dortmund and Leverkusen, they got their reality check in the 2016-17 season, and now they're going to be in the top of the league the next 3 years? Or is this something like, well, Dortmund and Leverkusen, they're going to be struggling for a long time to stay in the top of the league?
I think after 8 games, it's probably impossible to tell, but I think if I could add a factor that probably complements the one John just mentioned, and John just mentioned quite well, I think simple finances are beginning to play a part here. I think we saw this this has been happening in the Premier League for about 4 or 5 seasons now, where, I mean, the Bundesliga TV deal doesn't get as much press as the Premier League one because it's still completely dwarfed by English one, but it, compared to England and Spain, or compared to Italy and Spain, it runs circles around them, not just in terms of size, but in terms of its growth. And I think we're now beginning to see the consequence of that. You only have to look at these teams or question. Of course, Leipzig are an exception because they have their own money. But Hertha Berlin, this is a team who did similar, if not better, run as they're doing right now last season. Mm-hmm. Crucially, had were able to hold on to all the players that did well last season. They didn't have to sell Brooks, they didn't have to sell Weiser or Visar, they didn't have to sell Ibisevic. If these guys were wanted, the same goes for Cologne as well. Modeste, sure.
Well, to be fair with Cologne, they did sell like a good amount of their
sure, but
team.
There must have been
Timo
offers.
Horn is still there.
There must have been offers for Horn or Modeste
or Hector.
Hoffenheim. Now, of course, they're also a club who are financially backed by, well, not too, truly financially backed by the owner, but to bring in a player like Samuel Wagner is a huge signing as well. So. I think it's not obvious ones, and this isn't a theory that I've managed to think out entirely, but just off the top of my head, it seems to me like the teams these mid table teams who are doing well this season are doing well because they're good coaches and they have good players. But I think a large part of it is they're probably far more financially comfortable than they maybe would have been 5 years ago. So I think that plays a large part too.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we obviously there's a lot of exciting teams now, but we want to go to our talking points now, so let's go to our Shout from the Tribuna section. John, what do you want to shout from the Tribuna this week?
It was two things, actually.
You're only allowed one, John.
Oh, thanks. It's going to be a longer shout, I guess, but I'll try to make it relatively concise. First of all, we just talked about all of those sides overachieving. We didn't mentioned Hoffenheim, and as much as Steph is right to say yes, they are backed by Sapp and Dietmar Hopp, but what a gamble that's paid off by giving Julian Nagelsmann the job. You know, the guy's 29 and he's come in and he's dealt with a player like Sandro Wagner, who as a character has a notorious history of being difficult. He hasn't torn that team apart, he's actually galvanized it, and they are performing overperforming massively. We've talked about Hoffenheim slowly being a team that could or should be looking at a European spot in the last few seasons. They're finally looking like a team that are going to get there this year. I'd be very surprised if they don't make the Europa League. Yes, they'll lose a game. Yes, they'll lose their run of form at some point. But the squad that's come together has basically taken a group of talented players or talented individuals from a section of different teams, brought them together in one, and has finally got them playing successful football. And he's got them playing aggressively and exposing other teams. Leverkusen, even okay in the first 6 minutes, you know that's a setback that will affect any team. But they didn't even let Leverkusen really get back into that game. And I think that's a real credit to Nagelsmann. So Nagelsmann, go Julian. Big fan.
Okay, I'll jump in between your two then and just quickly comment on how the Weinziel revolution at Schalke is finally upon us, gentlemen.
Revolution's in blue and white this week.
Revolution, yeah, exactly. So
he's daring enough to play with the back three. So
yeah, but crucially, he is brave enough to dethrone the Dutch king of Schalke, Dutch king of Gelsenkirchen, who is Klaas Jan Huttelaar, who is a striker who I am no stranger to criticise on this podcast, and a striker who I think has gotten in the way of Weinziel's predecessors in the past as well. In the last five games, they've won four and drawn one. And the only game in which Huntelaar played a notable chunk of was, of course, last week against Augsburg when Mbolo was unfortunately injured. This weekend, instead of starting Huntelaar in Mbolo's absence, he goes with DeSanto.
In both games, in the Europa League game the game on the weekend.
Course. So I want to credit I've been waiting for a coach to come to Schalke and just have the balls to finally drop Huntelaar, and he's done it, and it's working wonders in my opinion. And now I know there's other things at play as well. Bentaleb seems to be doing a really good job there so far, and you know, much like Wolfsburg, they are a squad who should be doing well anyway. But I just found that quite interesting. It might just be a random fact. I think it's not. I think it's no coincidence that Huntelaar's out of the team and Schalke have started to play a lot better. Five games now without defeat, and it'll be interesting to see if Schalke do start quickly moving up the table.
John, you think there's another player another notable player at another notable club that maybe the team is better off not having
on
the team?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny just that DeSanto's playing well, because I don't rate him at all, and I actually think he was on the way out at Schalke. They didn't even really want him. It looked like he was gone. Yeah, and it looked like he was going. And yet, if he keeps playing like this, then he has no reason not to play him. Yeah, I don't think Bayern Munich need to play Thomas Müller.
Boom.
Mic drop, he leaves. No. Yes, I think it's a controversial thing to say, but quite frankly, if you watch the Gladbach game, yes, there are a lot of factors. Yes, Gladbach are tired. Yes, Gladbach are rubbish away from home. Yes, it's Bayern Munich. But modern football is certainly going in a certain direction. I feel like a lot of the big clubs in the world at the moment want to play with wide players, genuine wingers, who can win one-on-one situations and deliver good crosses. What we saw on the weekend was Arjen Robben and Douglas Costa doing exactly that, or taking shots and scoring goals, which is what Costa did. And it opens up a lot more opportunities for Bayern Munich. Ironically, of course, if you do that and you don't have Müller on the pitch, then you often lack someone in the box to score those goals because Lewandowski is not always there and is the only target. But I think it's a risk worth taking in the Bundesliga because it's Bayern Munich's most effective way of winning games. There are not many players in the league like Douglas Costa, Kingsley Coman, or Arjen Robben, or Frank Ribery, who can beat players in a one-on-one situation, plural players, and deliver a good cross. Notably improved delivery from Costa on the weekend. And bearing that in mind, what that means is most Bundesliga teams are going to succumb to that. Don't think Bundesliga defences are really ready to deal with players who are going to beat them with pace and skill in those situations. We've seen that from Dembele. If Dembele's end product was more consistent, then Dortmund would have a load more goals. So I don't think Thomas Müller needs to play in this team. It poses a huge conundrum about when and how to best play him and who to drop, because it affects the entire balance of the team. If you play him with Lewandowski and wide men, then you're going to lose someone in midfield. Maybe Thiago doesn't get as much game time, but it's a huge issue for them going forward if they want to play Thomas Müller. If they choose not to, I still think they can be very successful given the talent that they have out wide and given the trend that proves so effective at the moment of having skillful players who can win one-on-one situations.
All right, you got that off of your chest. I think Ross had that opinion as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's two and two in the Thomas Müller fan club on the podcast.
Well, I think if I were to define my position, I think it would be more that Thomas Müller isn't a wide player, and
yeah,
he's definitely better with a strike partner, which is why Pep Guardiola never played him out wide if at that much, if at all. And I think you're totally right that football football teams need more one-on-one players. So I mean,
but Ancelotti's also basically limited himself by saying he was going to stick to 4-3-3.
Yeah.
Mm.
So if that's the way he's going to play, then Thomas Müller will not play. Unless
yeah,
he plays for Lewandowski.
And a 4-3-3 is hard to figure out where Lewandowski fits. He could play number 10 in a 4-2-3-1 sort of formation, perhaps.
Yeah. Lewandowski is fine.
Sorry, Müller.
Yeah.
I meant Thomas Müller.
But you could play Müller where Lewandowski plays if you drop Lewandowski.
Yeah.
He can play in the middle, but that will be his only position.
Well, they did, though, against Frankfurt, and it wasn't that effective.
There
so.
You go.
The thing that I want to shout from the Tribune this week is a theory that I've had about Hamburg actually for the past few years. Is that
it's
they just
thesis we've got coming here.
They just need to be relegated already because I think honestly the fact that they have a clock showing that how long they've been in the Bundesliga, that puts a lot of pressure on the club to stay in the Bundesliga.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they finally went down, they can get rid of some of these assets, these expensive assets that have just not panned out. They can strip that team down to the core and they can really start to rebuild, come up again, and be a good team. They actually have some interesting youth players in their team and their youth setup. I think Trent Frecko was one that they are pretty high on. Obviously, they have I think Bakary Yata is the refugee that came in, that they signed. They have a lot of young players that they could develop if they actually got the playing time, but they're never going to get the playing time because they're always supposed to contend and they always throw money in the transfer market just so that they can survive in the Bundesliga 1 year longer and their clock can keep ticking. So I think we made the point off air that with Stuttgart they have also kind of gotten rid of a lot of their assets. Freiburg have done the same thing with when they went down recently. They've popped right back up with some of the players that they've used, but they've also brought in a lot of new talent that they were able to develop for a year in the second league before bringing them in, and they're doing even though they're hot and cold, they're doing pretty well. So I think Hamburg is one of those teams that if they actually went down, it might be the best thing to happen for their club.
And they should certainly look at Freiburg, because Christian Streich is the heart and soul of that team, and it shows that with the right approach, sometimes a long-term plan, Hamburg, can be the right one. But yeah, I agree.
I wonder how much Hamburg's just sheer size bog holds them down sometimes, maybe a bit like Stuttgart, where you have a clubs like
expectation.
Mine. Yeah, not even just expectation, but just sheer infrastructure and bureaucracy at these clubs, like clubs like Mainz and Freiburg, and even maybe like, for example, like Hoffenheim. When things aren't working out well, it doesn't take a lot to just, you know, wipe the slate clean. At Hamburg, you'd have to chim at people, the employees, perhaps, you know. So it's a similar scale to Stuttgart. In fact, it's probably a bit bigger than Stuttgart, but they're not different size, the two clubs. So,
but their, I mean, their setup is completely bonkers, too. I mean, they have this investor that apparently has a say in the transfers that they make. I mean, they were sending Labbadia one way, and they were sending their sporting director another way.
Beiersdorf is not an encouraging figure. Doesn't necessarily... And he doesn't make the right signings. I also don't understand why Filip Kostic went to Hamburg, given the offers that must have been on the table for him. Really, really strange.
Saying all that, though, I thought this summer, I thought Hamburg looked like they were in a decent spot. You know, Labbadia.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, they definitely did. I mean, Labbadia had taken them up to 10th place, and they had brought in players like Kostic, pried them away from...
There's still a lot of mediocrity in that team, though. I mean, they don't really have a striker. Lasoga's not a Bundesliga player.
Oh, they do. They've got Bobby Wood.
Yeah, okay, Bobby Wood. But he's still learning. Yeah. And you can't put all the pressure on his shoulders. Lasoga's not a Bundesliga striker. Halilovic is like 12, so he's still learning. And the defence is very raw, and you can't ask René Adler to have another renaissance, basically, because resurrection, because he's played well, but again, just too many weak points in this team.
Is it time for the dinosaur to reinvent itself?
Time for the dinosaur to become...
We need an asteroid.
And then,
we need an asteroid.
It's a bit morbid, but okay.
Yeah. So that'll do it for the Tribune Weekly this week. My thanks to Jonathan Harding and Stefan Biankowski. Jonathan Harding is at JohnBlog66, two G's and two sixes. And Stefan Biankowski is at SBiankowski. And by the way, tweet us your favorite overachieving and underachieving teams at the Tribuna podcast. My name is Davis Van Opterp, at Davis_Van Opterp on Twitter. And we hope to hear from you next week.